The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and maybe from the Tufts Health and Nutrition Letter. And the first article comes from the Harvard Health Letter of February 2022, and it's entitled, Should You Monitor This Chronic Inflammation Marker? Think twice before getting a C-reactive protein test on your own. Chronic inflammation is the common denominator in many diseases, and you might be tempted to get a blood test to gauge your risk. It's easy enough. In many states, certain labs will test you for an inflammation marker called C-reactive protein without an order from your doctor. Just be careful. Self-ordered CRP tests come with some real pitfalls. What is CRP testing? CRP is a protein your liver makes when it senses injury, infection, or inflammation in the body. The protein helps the immune system heal the injury or fight the infection. CRP levels can increase substantially in response to everything from a cold or a bad cut to autoimmune disease, cancer, heart disease, or obesity. Doctors order a test measuring CRP, sometimes called a high-sensitivity CRP protein or hsCRP test, to monitor many different health conditions. For example, CRP may be measured, among other blood markers, to assess how active rheumatoid arthritis is, or to see how well medications that reduce inflammation are working. CRP is also used as a predictor of cardiovascular disease, heart attack, or stroke. For someone with an intermediate risk for cardiovascular disease, the CRP test can help a doctor decide whether to prescribe medication to help reduce the risk. Increasingly, CRP tests are marketed to health-conscious consumers as a way of determining whether they have chronic inflammation. There are two ways to get one of these self-ordered tests. One way is at certain anytime walk-in labs. A customer simply makes an appointment to have blood drawn, then pays for the test out of pocket. It usually costs about $40 to $80. Another is from an online lab that will send a collection kit. Again, the cost is $40 to $60. When the collection kit arrives, the customer uses a finger prick method to obtain a small amount of blood, then mails the sample to the lab. To get results, the customer logs on to the lab's website, or the lab might call or send a letter. There are some potential problems, though. Getting a self-ordered CRP test comes with downsides. One is cost. Many health insurers will not cover self-ordered tests, and you need to pay up front when you order one. Here are other potential problems. Home kits may lead to errors. Collecting a blood sample at home with a finger stick can introduce errors that affect the final results. For example, if you have to milk your finger to obtain more blood, you might dilute the blood with other fluids, which would mean your sample would have a falsely decreased amount of important blood markers, says Dr. Nader Rifai, a professor of pathology at Harvard Medical School and a pioneer in CRP testing. Also, it's not the whole story. While a lab will tell you what your CRP level is, it won't explain what that snapshot of inflammation means for your health. A CRP test result is just one piece of evidence, and it may conflict with other evidence, especially in certain conditions. While the CRP level is one marker of how active rheumatoid arthritis is, the CRP level is sometimes normal even when rheumatoid arthritis is active, and high even when other evidence shows the arthritis is inactive, says rheumatologist Dr. Robert Schmerling, associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and medical editor of the Harvard Special Health Report, Fighting Inflammation. Results may cause anxiety. Seeing a lab result that indicates a high CRP level without talking to your doctor about it may provoke unnecessary feelings of distress. The results could create a false sense of security. For example, if the test result comes back in the lower cardiovascular disease risk range, it's not a guarantee that you're out of the woods and can forget about preventive measures, says Dr. Peter Libby, a cardiologist at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital, whose research has helped explain the role of inflammation in cardiovascular disease. It might lead to unnecessary treatment. If people get a CRP test on their own and it's a little high, I'm concerned they may go buy supplements with unproven value that contain hidden unhealthy ingredients, Dr. Libby says. Or maybe they'll get an unnecessary imaging test that doesn't need a doctor's order, which exposes them to radiation. If you're interested in measuring your CRP for some reason, talk to your doctor about it first. Perhaps the doctor will agree the test would be useful and can order a test at a trusted lab that's covered by your insurance or is less expensive than tests from walk-in or online labs. What if you're healthy and just curious about your CRP level? It might be better to keep your curiosity from getting the best of you. It's not at all clear that looking for evidence of low-grade inflammation in a person without a suspicion of inflammatory disease is a good idea, Dr. Schmerling says. It would frustrate me if people plunk down their dollars on tests that may lead to aggravation and anxiety, but they don't do the simple things to fight chronic inflammation, Dr. Libby says. I'd rather they exercise regularly, eat a healthy diet, get sufficient sleep, don't smoke, limit alcohol intake, and take their prescribed medications. Now we're going to turn in the Harvard Health Letter of February to Ask the Doctor by Dr. Anthony L. Komaroff, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. The question is, do older adults benefit from blood pressure treatment? Question. I've been taking blood pressure pills for 20 years, but I just turned 75. Do I still benefit from taking them? Dr. Komaroff answers, there is no doubt about the benefit of treating high blood pressure in people younger than 75. But some doctors have wondered if in people older than 75, the benefits might be less and the chance of bad reactions to medication might be greater. So you're asking a question that we doctors have asked ourselves. A study published online August 26th of 2021 by The Lancet is the best one I've seen on this question. It indicates that the value of blood pressure treatment continues in people over 75 years old. Scientists pooled the results of 51 randomized clinical trials involving 358,707 people who ranged in age from 21 to 105 years old. Nearly 59,000 people were age 75 or older. With so many people in the analysis, the results are more likely to be valid. Randomized trials are the best type of study for judging the benefits and the risks of treatment. Such trials randomly assign some people to take a real blood pressure pill and others to take a placebo or inactive pill. Since the people in the two groups are very similar except for the kind of pill they are taking, any differences in their subsequent health are likely to be explained by whether they took the real medicine or the placebo. So because of the large number of people in the analysis and the fact they were all in randomized trials, we can trust the results of the analysis. The study mainly looked at cardiovascular disease like stroke, heart attack, and other heart problems caused by clogged arteries. For people younger than 75, the study confirmed that people taking blood pressure medications had 10 to 20% fewer cardiovascular disease problems. For people 75 to 84, there was still a 10% reduction. For people older than 85, the results were mixed, but there still appeared to be a benefit from blood pressure treatment. While this analysis did not specifically look at side effects from treatment, other large studies have. The bottom line is that side effects from blood pressure treatment are not greater in people over 75 than in younger people. Rarely an older person develops unpleasant symptoms if treatment lowers the blood pressure below 130 over 85 millimeters of mercury, requiring a lower dose of medication. While this analysis did not specifically look at side effects from treatment, other large studies have. The bottom line is that side effects from blood pressure treatment are not greater in people over 75 than in younger people. Rarely, an older person develops unpleasant symptoms if treatment lowers blood pressure below 130 over 85 millimeters of mercury, requiring a lower dose of medication. So this analysis confirms that treatment to lower blood pressure protects against heart attack, stroke, and other major cardiovascular disease problems in the average person below age 75. The person in the 75 to 84 age group, and possibly the person older than 85. The goal of treatment is a blood pressure of around 120 over 70. Fortunately, today there are many effective treatments for high blood pressure. The next article in the Harvard Health Letter of February 2022 is entitled, Shield Your Brain from Decline. Use the SHIELD acronym to remember the lifestyle habits that will help protect your memory and thinking skills. And that's S-H-I-E-L-D, all the letters capitalized. We are making encouraging progress in finding medication that prevents or even reverses cognitive decline. Until we get there, however, the most powerful way to protect the brain is to live a healthy lifestyle. The healthy habits to include are summed up with the acronym SHIELD, developed by neuroscientist Rudolf Tanzi, co-director of the McCants Center for Brain Health at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Here's what SHIELD means. S stands for sleep at least 7 hours a night. As you sleep, your brain flushes out waste material. Also, microglial cells in the brain clean out a toxic protein called beta amyloid, which can clump together and form the plaques of Alzheimer's disease. Microglial cells are like scrubby bubbles, Tanzi explains. To get enough cleansing, you need 7 or 8 hours of sleep that includes dream sleep and deep sleep. What if you can't sleep that long? Take a nap. If it includes dream sleep and deep sleep, you'll gain an extra cleaning cycle, Tanzi says. The H in SHIELD stands for Handle Stress. When you're stressed or worrying about the past or the future, it activates a set of brain areas where you internalize emotion. Cells there may make more amyloid under stress, and this may be where Alzheimer's plaques begin to accumulate. Stress also produces the hormone cortisol, which can kill brain cells and trigger brain inflammation, which is an even bigger killer of brain cells. He recommends finding ways to gain relief in stressed or anxious moments. Do something else that will engage your mind, like meditating, taking a walk in nature, gardening, doing a hobby you love, or just watching a documentary, he advises. The I in SHIELD stands for interact with friends. It's okay if you like being alone, but if solitude causes stress and loneliness, it increases the risk of Alzheimer's. So it's important to stay socially active. Researchers suggest that it helps to see one or two relatives or close friends besides the family you see every day at least once a month. Tansey says they should be people you feel close to and can confide in. If these people aren't nearby, Tansey says a phone or video call can be effective. And if you don't have other people in your life, it's time to meet some new ones. Talk to your neighbors, join a club, or if you're tech savvy, join an online group. The E in SHIELD stands for exercise daily. Aerobic exercise, the kind that gets your heart and lungs pumping, like brisk walking, promotes the birth of new brain cells in the brain's short-term memory area by increasing the production of a protein called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF. BDNF is like Miracle-Gro for new brain cells. Our research has found that you need BDNF to keep new brain cells alive, Tansey says. Exercise also increases the production of enzymes that break down amyloid. Your goal should be 150 minutes of aerobic exercise per week, which means about 22 minutes a day. It's okay to start with just a few minutes per day and build up gradually. L stands for learn new things. Learning new information creates new connections between brain cells, which keeps thinking and memory sharp. Unfortunately, we lose these connections as we age. The more you lose, the more cognition declines. Thankfully, we can increase the number of synapses we have at any age. Learning new information can be as simple as listening to a nonfiction audiobook or trying a new recipe. Or it could be more involved, like taking a class online. The more synapses you make now, the more you can afford to lose later. It's like money in the bank, and making new synapses also reinforces the old ones. Finally, the D in SHIELD stands for eat a healthy diet. Sugary, salty, and processed foods promote inflammation. Instead, eat a plant-based diet rich in vegetables, fruits, legumes, nuts, and seeds. These foods contain fiber and other healthy nutrients. They promote healthy gut bacteria and help protect the brain against inflammation. Reducing inflammation includes brain inflammation, promotes the clearing of brain amyloid while you sleep, Dr. Tansey says. So let's put it all together. Ideally, you'll incorporate all these healthy lifestyle habits into your daily routine. If that feels like too much, take it slowly. Focus on one habit per day, like getting more sleep on Monday, reducing stress on Tuesday, and meeting with friends on Wednesday. Eventually, you'll practice all the habits every day, Tansey says, and it's never too late for them to make a difference in your cognition. Now we're going to talk a little bit about foods that fight inflammation. Load your meals with healthy foods that offer maximum inflammation-fighting potential. In the fight against chronic inflammation, a state of persistent activation of the immune system, Your diet is a powerful weapon. Eating healthy foods can help quiet chronic inflammation, and it benefits your health in other ways too, like lowering your cholesterol levels, for example. Chronic inflammation often is seen with, and may contribute to, chronic diseases like diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cognitive decline. Where do you find inflammation-fighting foods? They're all part of a Mediterranean-style diet, which consists of fruits, vegetables, legumes, whole grains, nuts, seeds, lean proteins, and small amounts of dairy foods and olive oil. Plant-based foods provide us with vitamins, minerals, fiber, and phytochemicals, plant chemicals that appear to fight free radicals and may protect our cells against inflammation, cancer growth, and viruses, says Kathy McManus, director of the Department of Nutrition at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Fish, nuts, and plant oils contain healthy unsaturated fats, which are good for your blood vessels, heart, and brain. There are some more foods that support the quest to keep inflammation in check. The first one is berries. Strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, and blackberries may just seem like sweet treats, but berries are also hard-working inflammation fighters. Berries contain phytochemicals called anthocyanins, which give the fruits their red and purple hues. Anthocyanins have an anti-inflammatory effect on cells and are associated with lower risks of heart disease, cognitive decline, and diabetes. Next is fatty fish. Fatty fish like salmon, tuna, and sardines are abundant sources of omega-3 fatty acids, which have been shown to reduce cardiovascular disease. That benefit might be due to reduced inflammation in the body, especially in the blood vessels, protecting them against the buildup of plaque. Some evidence have found that eating fatty fish is associated with lower levels of C-reactive protein, an inflammatory marker in the blood that we talked about earlier. Leafy greens. Green leafy vegetables like arugula, chard, kale, and spinach are loaded with vitamins A, B, C, E, and K, as well as important minerals like iron, magnesium, and potassium, and phytochemicals. Spinach is associated with a reduction in inflammation levels over time, slowed cognition decline, and reduced risks for coronary artery disease and stroke. Tiny but mighty nuts and seeds like pistachios, almonds, sunflower seeds, and pumpkin seeds are rich in fiber and other nutrients that helps to keep your gut's bacteria healthy, and in turn may help tamp down brain inflammation. Certain nuts and seeds like walnuts, flaxseed, chia seeds, and hemp seeds are also good sources of omega-3 fatty acids. Tomatoes get their superpowers from a phytochemical called lycopene. It not only gives tomatoes their vibrant red color, but also appears to help reduce levels of interleukin 6, a protein that causes inflammation. Tomatoes are also associated with a reduced risk for developing heart disease and prostate cancer. To get enough foods that fight inflammation, eat at least 2 servings of fatty fish a week and at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. 2 fruits, 3 vegetables. It's okay to enjoy a handful of nuts or seeds each day. And you'll want to bulk up on fiber sources like legumes, such as beans and lentils. For the most part, get the widest variety of plant-based foods possible. For example, make a big green salad with several kinds of greens and colorful vegetables, seeds, berries, and a simple dressing of a little olive oil and vinegar. or cook whole grains like quinoa or brown rice and stir in the greens of your choice, beans, colorful vegetables like carrots, squash, and tomatoes. It's easiest to toss extra plant foods into a meal when you have them on hand. If produce seems to spoil faster than you can use it, keep it in your freezer, divided into small amounts. That way you can reach for fruits and vegetables when you need them, says McManus. And as much as possible, avoid eating processed foods. They typically contain high amounts of calories, as well as added sugars, unhealthy saturated fats, salt, and are associated with chronic inflammation. There's a very brief story that says drinking both coffee and tea is linked to a lower risk for stroke and dementia. Are you a coffee drinker or are you more of a tea person? Consider being both. A study published November 16, 2021, found that having both coffee and tea in the diet was associated with a reduced risk of dementia and stroke. Researchers evaluated the health and self-reported coffee and tea drinking habits of 365,000 older adults in the United Kingdom who were followed for 11 years. Compared with people who did not drink any tea or coffee, people who drank 2 or 3 cups of coffee, as well as 2 to 3 cups of tea, had a 28% lower risk of dementia and a 32% lower risk of stroke during the study period. The combination of both drinks in the diet appears to have a stronger association than just having one or the other. It could be because these beverages contain polyphenols, plant chemicals that help fight chronic inflammation. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.